morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet, and I am here in the studio with Letitia McDaniel and the late Patty Fink, who is texting us from Wycliffe Avenue. She'll be here in a second. And our guest today is Anna Waugh. She is a new reporter with the Dallas Voice. Welcome, Anna.
Thank you very much.
And we're just going to talk news today.
Do a little coffee talk.
A little coffee talk, yeah. Okay. So, news. Big news, actually, lately. The biggest local story, and Anna, you're the one who's been covering this, a hate crime that went on in Arlington. But what's really horrible, I mean, that one, it was property damage. They caught the people. Good. There was a real bad one down in Portland, Texas, which is just south of Corpus Christi. Real bad one. Mm-hmm. One girl killed and one in the hospital in very serious condition. But let's talk about the local one first, and then we'll get to the real bad one. Anna, what happened in Arlington?
Yeah, well, it was a Sunday, June 10th, the early hours between 2 and 6 a.m. You had residents wake up, and they had graffiti. They had foul images. They had racial slurs, anti-gay slurs targeted on a lesbian couple's car, and just 13 homes and vehicles targeted total. And police got the word out, and they trickled in. They got four people turned themselves in. They arrested the last person on Monday, 16 to 18 years old, five people, one juvenile. So,
now that's interesting. How do you catch people who've done property crime overnight?
They had two surveillance cameras. Two properties actually had surveillance, but they didn't. Those houses actually weren't targeted. So they just with the media, they said, "Oh, that's our neighborhood." They went. They knocked on doors. They were asking everyone. So they eventually found surveillance camera footage of that, which clearly identified their vehicle, and then the other video clearly identified all five people. So that was really lucky for police. It really helped it. So you had Fort Worth teens and Arlington teens with ties to the area.
Yeah. Huh. So it wasn't anyone bragging or, you know, some idiot putting a picture of them on Facebook.
Right. Well, people thought it was random. They thought it was a random attack, but then you had someone spray paint child rapist on someone's car who was not a convicted molester, so we thought, well, who was this? And then the lesbian couple had a decal. I call them soccer mom decals, where they had two moms, caricatures, and then a kid and a dog on their car. And they spray painted queers and faggot, and they said this is clearly a hate crime.
So they're going after hate crime
charges.
They
are going after hate crime charges. They're thinking to combine all of the incidents to make it a state jail felony, which would be a total damage of greater than $1,500. So it wouldn't be a misdemeanor charge. It would be a state jail felony. With the hate crime enhancement, it could be a third-degree felony this time.
Which means how many years?
2 to 10.
2 to 10.
At least 2 years.
And these were young people?
Yes.
Like, one was under 18?
One was 16, and then you had 17 and 3 18-year-olds.
Okay, so for just a night of pranks, which is what they thought it was, they actually did. I mean, if you spray paint a car, to restore a fairly new car, to restore the paint job, it's more than just going through a car wash to
clean
it. Well,
it's a couple hundred dollars. Well, I talked to one of the women in the couple, and she said because they went the next day on Monday, mm-hmm. they had a two-year-old son, and they didn't want him to see it.
Sure.
And so they went the next day and said, luckily, spray paint, if you wait a while, it dries, so it's difficult to get off. But because they went the next day, it was only like $400, so their insurance covered it.
Oh.
So it helps that if they do end up combining the cases, they'll get the felony charge.
Okay, because I was going to say, if you had to repaint that car, that's over $1,000.
Absolutely.
And if you're spending that much on that one, repainting something in a house, on the house, it's not cheap to repaint a house.
No, when garage doors were targeted.
Sure. So that adds up really quickly. I mean, this was not just minor damage. It's also not something you could live with. It wasn't the backside of a fence that faces an alley, which is what an awful lot of graffiti is. This was on cars, on garage doors facing streets and stuff that had to be fixed in order for this neighborhood to not look like garbage. So these kids are facing couple of years in jail.
Most of them first-time offenders, which helps.
Most are first-time offenders. The first one who was arrested, though, he
is on probation, juvenile probation.
We don't know for what, though.
No,
oh, it was
juvenile, so it's
probation, so we don't know. Right. But juvenile probation counts against you if you're then arrested again.
Absolutely.
After you're 18. Mm-hmm. So, There was another hate crime, though, this week. And this was a real bad one. It was two girls. They were in a park.
Late Friday, yeah.
Late on Friday night. You know, and in Dallas, we'd say, what are you doing in a park late on Friday night? This is Portland, which is right on the coast. It's a small town. It's not a place where you think to be afraid to walk into a park.
Mm-hmm.
What you think is, it's a park. What should be safer?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what a park is there for.
And in a small town, especially down on the Texas coast, I mean, there's one of the things to do is go enjoy nature. I mean, lots of people, I have family all along the coast, and, you know, it's a great time to walk along the beach at night, and, I mean, really late at night, too, you know, mm-hmm. 11, 12 o'clock at night. It's not unusual at all.
Right.
That's why I thought this was so interesting in that, you know, we're saying this is a lesbian couple, and I think that's pretty well established, mm-hmm. even though I believe the one that survived the shooting is not yet conscious. There's a lot of friends and family who've confirmed that. So let's hope it wasn't a hate crime, but if it was, this is big.
Mm-hmm.
It's really big.
Well, we're saying let's hope it wasn't a hate crime, but either way, one of them is dead. The 18-year-old is
absolutely dead.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just a horrific crime. But because they were a lesbian couple, either way, it's of concern to our community.
It puts the doubt in mm-hmm. our minds to think, was this a hate crime? It's a small town, mm-hmm. a well-known couple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the last homicide was 2 years ago, according mm-hmm. to authorities.
Yeah.
So what does this mean for the community down there?
I mean, you really have to wonder, were they targeted because they were gay? Did someone come along and happen upon them and say, you know, you deserve death?
Right.
Yeah. You know, that's
really
scary.
Because they both were targeted, too. Mm-hmm. And it's lucky that, it's sad that one died, but it's good that the other one is at least healing.
Yeah, you just think about, you know, this is a small town. Who walks around in a small town just randomly carrying a gun, you know, trying to target people? So to me, it feels like it was definitely someone that they knew. Mm-hmm. That would be my guess. Not somebody that's just.
Or
like,
somebody who knew them.
Well, yeah, knew them. Or knew of them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll hear more as facts unfold, but we don't know a lot right now, do we?
Yeah.
No, because it happened, they estimate, between midnight and 2 a.m. early Saturday morning, and then they were found by people walking in the park at 9 a.m., mm-hmm. and one was still...
It's amazing that one of them was still alive.
I know. They were saying it had at least been 9 hours until they had been found, and I'm thinking, how was it possible? That's a miracle in itself.
A gunshot wound to the head.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty bad, yeah.
Right. Although... Had it missed the brain, had it been more than a graze but missed the brain somehow,
right.
Who knows? Big difference, though, in the way the police departments are handling this. Now, here's what I always say. I've talked to police several times after these hate crimes, and my question is usually, are you investigating this as a hate crime? Oh, no, we don't know that it's hate crime yet. I didn't ask that. I'm saying, are you looking into that as a possible motive? And here's what I'm saying by that. Police always are looking for a motive, because what the motive does is it helps you figure out who might have done this. If it was a possible... police always look at things as, that was possible domestic violence, that was possible...
Robbery.
You always look at it with what was the motivation here, what was going on. You're trying to figure out what happened leading up to the crime. Now, Anna, when you asked the spokesperson
mm-hmm.
in Arlington, are you looking into this as a possible hate crime? You weren't saying, are you calling this a hate crime
right.
because there was that sticker on that damn lesbian's car? That's not what you said. You were asking, are you looking into this as a possible hate crime?
Right.
What was the answer?
Oh, absolutely not. This was across-the-board ugliness. We're investigating it as a crime. If there's a hate element to it, we'll turn it over to the DA's office. But what sends a message to the LGBT community is, if you say it's a possible hate crime or we're investigating it as a hate crime, especially in Dallas, we're used to Dallas police calling something, oh, this looks like a hate crime. You check the hate crime box, or the bias box, and it makes it seem like you're asking the right questions, that you're really searching for, was this hate-based? was there a bias? So when you automatically say, well, we're just investigating it as a crime, it puts that little layer of doubt in your mind, are they asking the right questions? And then, you know, a couple days later, it was like, no, it does look like a hate crime now. So within a day and a half, it's looked like a hate crime. Okay, that's great. Well, not great, but it's great that you're now asking those questions.
Is it because you were starting to ask the right questions?
So. Perhaps someone was.
Someone was.
Most likely. But that happens a lot when people don't. That's what happened in Plano. Mm-hmm. They still haven't caught those two guys.
And what happened in Plano?
Plano was the that was a couple weeks ago now. It was the day before Memorial Day. Sunday afternoon, May 27th, 2 p.m. in the afternoon. And Plano Sports Authority, which is not the sporting goods store, it's actually a recreational center for youth. Two young girls and a young man, 18, were leaving, and two males walked up and made an insinuating comment towards the females because they were holding hands, and their male friend intervened, and they beat him up. He said, please, you know, whatever the comments were, but they were originally labeled as rude comments by police. And the mom called us and was saying it was because they were lesbians. He called them all these names, and my son won't even repeat the words that they used. And I said, well, okay, hopefully he told them to police. So called police, and they said, we don't even know that anything was said. And I said, okay, well, basically we're going what the mom has told us, which is what her son has told us. And the son was very shy and didn't want to talk, and that's understandable. He was going to graduate the next week. He doesn't want to be a target. And so we followed up with police, and then the interesting part was, the next day I called, it was a different spokesperson because the other guy was on vacation. And he said, oh, yeah, I remember the detective saying that there were comments made. So we verified that there was something said at this point. And then the next day the other guy was back and said, oh, we've reassessed and we found that they were sexually derogatory comments. Mm-hmm. And now they're investigating as a hate crime. So it really elevated at that point to being, it was a priority for police, what they were saying in the beginning, because you had someone pull out a gun and pistol whip an 18-year-old outside of a recreational facility. But because it was them making comments because a couple was holding hands, that just...
Well, it really shouldn't matter what it was.
It shouldn't matter what it was, absolutely. Right, but it's not like they were like... It's not like he ran up and said, what, punk, what do you want? Leave him alone. The police were said, no, it appears by what he's telling us that he did not instigate anything. He just said, hey, can you be polite? You know, towards women in general, and he said, you know, why are you defending, da 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 da. So, but the surveillance video for the rec center was broken that day.
Ah.
So.
That is always the story.
It is
Dallas.
Always the story. Well, in Plano, yeah. But they thought that they would be able to identify one of the men. They identified as two black men, medium height, medium build, but one guy had a tattoo on his left forearm, and he had, orange highlights in his dreadlocks. Well, then the PIO was saying, we went into an apartment complex nearby, and there was a lot of people with orange highlights in their dreadlocks, so I guess that's the new thing. And I said, well, is that a gang activity now? And he said, no, I think it's just a style thing. And I said, okay. So we're still waiting on that one. It's possible, but as far as we know, they're still going door to door and really trying to get those people, because it's a concern in Plano. That's their first ever reported anti-hate crime that we know of.
Well, I think it's interesting that so many people question why we need an anti-hate crimes law or hate crimes prevention law that it, you know, enhances penalties or enhances the charge perhaps, because so many people say, oh, well, every crime's a hate crime. Mm-hmm. And as former state representative Harriet Earhart used to talk about at length on our show for many years, writing a hot check is not a hate crime. There are lots of crimes out there that are not hate crimes. And we look at intent when we look at murder, that's the difference between, county jail for a year and capital punishment, and the death penalty. Mm-hmm. We look at intent determines all of that. Mm-hmm. And so we definitely look at intent, and we do have laws for different people. We have laws for if you harm a police officer, if you harm a child, all of those things
pregnant
are considered
woman.
Pregnant woman. There are lots of special laws for different kinds of things. And one of the things I think most people miss in terms of looking at why we have hate crimes laws is that it's when you're targeting a whole group of people, it is intended to instill fear in a whole group of people, and it is a form of domestic terrorism.
you know. There's another reason, though, for investigation purposes. When Anna was asking the Arlington police, are you looking at this as a possible hate crime? Oh, no. And then they're saying, oh, yeah, well, of course, because of the sticker and the... Yes, that's what we were saying in the first place, that because of the sticker, they wrote the word faggot across the back of the windshield. They wrote that. And there was the sticker. Put them together. It's a lesbian couple, you know. Investigate it as a hate crime. Now, it is possible in the investigation that they'll find out that this dumb jerk who did this didn't put two and two together, wasn't bright enough to figure it out.
Calls everybody that.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And that it wasn't a hate crime.
And the coincidence that it ended up on the one lesbian couple's vehicle.
Well, but you know what? You know what?
Because there was a racial slur, but that person at that residence was Caucasian.
Right.
So they're not investigating that part as a hate crime.
Now, and here,
yeah, that's bizarre.
It's very odd.
Here's the other part of it, though. Isn't just using racial slurs in a way a hate crime? And here's what I mean by that. Mm. There's a difference between just spray painting your initials or spray painting something stupid and spray painting one of those other words. One has a real hate motive to it. Doesn't matter who the victim is necessarily, but one has a hate motive. One has just a destruction motive. And there are different things. One, if somebody uses those words, although that won't prove hate in court under the Texas hate crime law, there is a hate motivation back there if you use those words, if you're the type of person who uses them. Anyway, that was my argument with the Arlington police. Just be open to looking at this as if it might be a hate crime. You do investigate things. You were investigating it as malicious mischief, which is what they were doing. So why aren't you also opening up your possibilities, investigate it as possible hate motive, investigate it as possible whatever else motive there might have been.
You can investigate it as anything that doesn't determine the outcome of that investigation.
That's the point of investigating. We understand. You're investigating. You haven't caught anyone yet. Open up your mind to it. Whereas, here was the difference. In Portland, right away they were saying, there is a possible hate motive here.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't say, that's the reason it was done, and we know who did it. And they don't know. They're investigating. But right away in the initial statement by the police there, they acknowledged that hate was a possible motive. And I heard that, and I went, ah,
see, and they
got
they,
it.
He immediately said they didn't rule it out,
mm-hmm.
because it could have been a factor. And I thought that was really smart. And I
and
saw
that was a small town police, of course.
Yes, because it's a pretty small town.
Yeah.
But I saw last night that Equality Texas and the Human Rights Campaign have issued a statement and called for the Department of Justice to get involved and to look into this this murder and, you know, assault, attempted murder.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully. You know, we can get some other resources involved to help this small town investigate this really horrific crime.
Right, but I have no doubt that that town, just going by what the police chief said, that there was no, well, it was just a couple of lesbians, that there was none of that. There was outrage and horror throughout that town. There's going to be a vigil, by the way, on Saturday night. Anybody know what time?
I looked it up. It's 8:30.
8:30 in
over
the evening?
At the Legacy of Love, you know, the big monument out in Oaklawn.
At Oaklawn and Cedar Springs.
Yeah, Oaklawn and Cedar Springs. And there's a couple others that are planned. There's actually one planned in Portland, Texas. And I think that is
that
today.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's
today.
There's
one in Washington, one in San Francisco.
And then there's one in, you know, in Castro in San Francisco. That's Cleve Jones. So,
yeah.
Organizing that one. And that one's Friday, I think. But
and I imagine some more will pop up as well.
Yeah.
Because it's really unfolding in the press.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting how this one is really taking hold, kind of the way Matthew Shepard did. There's absolute outrage and horror over this one. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON-FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Letitia McDaniel. Our guest is Anna Waugh of Dallas Voice. We'll be back with more right after this.
You're listening to KNON 89.3 FM in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
KNON thanks Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions for their support of KNON. Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions provides KNON all our copy services. Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions sells, leases, rents, and services a full line of color and black and white Canon copiers with scanning, printing, and faxing capabilities. Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions offers wholesale packaging back to the consumer market in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Overstock, demo models, and used equipment with full warranty is available. For more information, 214-431-5191 or BEYERimaging.com.
GoodSearch.com provides a way for you to support nonprofits like KNON with your online shopping and dining. GoodSearch.com offers a downloadable toolbar for searching from your computer called Good App, so your purchases can support KNON. With Good Dining, every time you go out to eat at participating restaurants, then a portion of what you spend gets donated to KNON. Registering is easy at GoodSearch.com, and KNON 89.3 is the name to enter in your account settings for charity selection. Support KNON with your online shopping and dining at GoodSearch.com.
Tune in every Monday morning at 7 a.m. to KNON's newest talk program, Jim Schutz, Get Off My Lawn, sponsored by the Dallas Observer. Jim Schutz, Get Off My Lawn brings you the story not covered by Dallas's other news outlets. Jim will be taking your calls and featuring special guests.
This is Jim Schutz. I'll be your host for Get Off My Lawn every Monday morning at 7 a.m. on KNON.
This is Lewis from UT Arlington, and I listen to Lambda Weekly podcast at LambdaWeekly.com.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with Letitia McDaniel and the late Patty Fink. And
I'm alive.
Anna Waugh is our guest today from Dallas Voice. We're talking news. Patty, you helped organize this. So City Pride, the fourth one, is going to be today at?
At noon at Dallas City Hall.
So be there promptly at 12:20.
Well, it'll be from 12 to 1. And this is our last in a series of Pride Wednesdays in June with the City of Dallas. And as you come into City Hall, you'll see a huge Pride flag hanging in the lobby for the entire month, mm-hmm. and that's exciting. And we may have to do lights next year. So we saw what the City of Houston did
at
their City Hall. We should look into doing that next year. But this is the last in a series, and it'll be a panel discussion about the value contribution of the LGBT community in the City of Dallas. So we'll have lots of folks from it's a fairly large panel with representatives, from business, from community organizations, from others talking about, how our community makes a serious impact on this city. Mm-hmm. So that'll be really exciting. It's about an hour long, so it'll be in tandem with Dallas Council City Council meeting. Mm-hmm. Can't even think. Can't talk. And so hopefully we'll have some attendees from the Dallas City Council as well. And we'll wrap up our month-long celebration of Pride mm-hmm. with the City of Dallas.
Good.
And if you have ideas for things to do next year, please let Council Member Delia Hasso know. Right. She can help get that organized for our celebration next year.
For Pride this year, Houston, there was a big article in the Houston Chronicle called something like, "Why is our parade so ugly?" Now, actually, they actually have a nice parade because it's at night, and so all of the entries are lit up. So you have a car, but it's outlined in lights, or you have a float, and might not be much on it, but whatever's outlined in lights so that you can see it, which is kind of interesting looking. Our parade, on the other hand...
a slight eyesore.
Okay, so I'm not the only one who's thinking that, right?
Right.
The other complaint, though, about the Houston parade, and I don't know what you think about this, is that it's very corporate, that the parade was led off by Bud Light and their truck, and then big banks and oil companies are in the parade. Now, the reason they are is because they have lots and lots of gay employees, and...
Big employee resource groups,
but
and they have the money to actually afford to be in the parade.
And to build a nice float.
Build a nice float.
Get some costumes going.
Because the entry fee for a parade is not cheap. And I'm thinking, like, especially maybe Houston and New York and San Francisco, they're ridiculous prices. So I can see that it is going to be mostly larger companies that are going to be involved in, mm-hmm. you know, participating in the parade. And some of these little smaller, I would call, you know, queer groups are not going to be able to afford the entry fee. So, you know.
Here's what I think. I grew up outside New York, so to me a parade is what we call the Macy Day Parade. It was Macy Day, yes. The Macy Day Parade. And that is the traditional name of that parade because it was Macy's that sponsored it.
Uh-huh.
And it was Macy Day is Thanksgiving, of course,
which is
the New York City name for Thanksgiving, I guess, Macy Day. But
because you know those Macy's with their pilgrim hats and everything back
right.
in the day.
That's what it was called. But the big Macy's parade with the big balloons and the, you know, and it's televised. So to me, that's what I'm comparing a parade to, as opposed, you know, and that's one parade nationwide. They bring in the best bands from all over the country. They bring in float builders, you know, and that parade costs millions every year, and they're reusing the balloons. So I think that's what everybody is comparing it to, and it's like, well, why can't we do that? Because it costs too much.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, too, I mean, I remember going to New York City to visit a friend of mine at years ago, this is back in the mid-80s, and we happened to go, and she was Irish Catholic and worked at the World Trade Center, and which was there at the time, and it was the St. Patrick's Day Parade, and it was on a Saturday. So what a coup, huh? You know, to be able to be there for that. Mm-hmm. And it just went on and on, but it was so fun to see all of those groups go by. And I know that we have a lot of groups that participate, and it can be quite a long parade, but you know, if they, you know, you're right, it's a barrier to meet the fee.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if there's some sort of limitation that they have to comply with in terms of how long they can block the streets and that sort of thing, too. So they, I'm sure there's
The longer you go, the permit is higher.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So that may be a cost that they are having to compensate as well in order to contain how long we keep the street blocked. But it is exciting to see as many groups as possible,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially when you get to something like PFLAG or a group where it just warms your heart. It's not commercial, you know.
Yeah.
That's always exciting.
Well, here was my question. The New York parade this weekend, Governor Cuomo marched. It was the one-year anniversary of same-sex marriage in New York, of course. Our parade is coming up in September, which will be about the one-year anniversary of... some former guest of ours wrote a book about our governor. Will our governor march in our parade?
I kind of doubt it.
Oh, okay. Just
kind of doubt it. What do you think?
Right. It's still time.
Highly unlikely.
Maybe his hairdresser will get to him one day.
You know? Right. There are a lot of gays in politics.
We'll see.
Speaking about gays in politics, you have a cover story coming out this week in Dallas Voice about...
El Paso's Mary Gonzalez. Yes.
And who is she?
She's the first lesbian elected to our state legislature. So.
First out lesbian.
First out lesbian. Very true. Never know. She won her Democratic primary. She won 52% of the vote. She has no Republican opponent in November, so she will...
She's just waiting to be sworn in.
I know, right? She's just on hold. She's waiting. Yeah. Busy girl. Still 28. She'll be the youngest representative in January when she's sworn in. And she's excited. She's very energetic. Every time I talk to her on the phone, she's, you know, usually always busy, but she's like, I'm here, what's going on? And I think just the passion in her voice. I mean, she grew up in that district. Her dad was on the school board for 10 years. She was like, I grew up watching Meet the Press. I didn't watch cartoons. So she really had that civil service attitude from a young age. And I just think she really was the ideal candidate. And she was gay-baited still, even within the Democratic Party. And she was like, I can't believe I was. We're Democrats. We believe in gay rights.
I mean, the Democratic Party just endorsed full marriage equality.
Exactly.
In the platform.
And that was one of the main things her opponent was holding against her, was that she had written something a long time ago about same-sex marriage. And she was like, are you seriously bringing this up? Yes, I'm for marriage equality. But she didn't let her sexuality define the race. I think that was what's important, because she has Caldinas, which are impoverished, unincorporated areas. And she has lots of those in her district. And she's like, I want to get them clean drinking water. I want to get them running water. I want to get them electricity. I want them to have a good education. I want them to go to college. And she's really focused on that. And she's not sure right now.
Oh, so you mean the lesbian legislator wants to just be a good legislator?
Pretty much, right. So she's not really sure what LGBT legislation she could help get passed. I know Quality Texas is really pushing for a statewide ENDA, Employment Non-Discrimination Act. But we'll see on that. And if anything, she just really wants to gain allies and to really and not be the sole voice for the LGBT community, because she knows that there's other people. AIDS, possible other legislators.
Governor
possibly. So she's not the only one, but she's going to be portrayed, obviously, as the only one. And every time something happens, she'll be called upon. But she's, I think she's up for the task.
I hope she goes and spends a weekend or, you know, just hanging out with Glenn Maxey.
Mm-hmm.
For one, we need a photo of them together
because they're really the
only two ever in the state. And it's great that a woman now is, you know, we've got gender parity a little bit.
A Latina.
Latina, no less.
Even more diverse.
And from El Paso.
Yeah.
You know?
Which has been in the media because of their domestic partnership fight and their mayor, and who's up for a national mayor of the world because of his fight for El Paso getting domestic partner benefits, standing up and going to court.
Oh, that's cool. That's exciting to bring that part of the state into real focus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's going to be exciting to see how she handles all of that, because she will be the go-to person.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but we've had gay people in the legislature before. They just weren't out at the time they were serving. In fact, Barbara Jordan, the beloved Barbara Jordan, was gay, and her partner of 30 years was a presence, actually.
Sure.
There. All you have to do is listen to Glenn tell the stories.
There's a possibility of a second lesbian winning, though.
There is, yes.
And who is that?
It's Ann Johnson of Houston, District 134, which covers the Rice area and parts of Harris County. She is a daughter of former state rep Jake Johnson. He served for 2 years back in the 70s, two terms back in the 70s. And she was a former Harris County assistant DA, and she has her own private law firm. And she's revved up. She's ready to go. She had an uncontested primary. She's going against one-term incumbent, Sarah Davis, who's a Republican, who kind of came in as a moderate, seemed a little Tea Party-ish when she first came into office, but she voted for the anti-bullying bill, but she voted to defund Texas University LGBT Resource Centers. So that's kind of, we're still not really sure where she is on that. But the anti-bullying wasn't really LGBT inclusive. It didn't have that clearly stated. It just came against bullying of all types. So,
We have a couple of Supreme Court decisions that are coming up this week. So let's change gears a little bit, start talking about that. On Thursday, there'll be a decision on the health care law. On Monday, there was a decision on the Arizona immigration law. Neither of them are specifically gay, but certainly both of them relate to the gay and lesbian community. So on Monday, they said you can't do a whole bunch of things that the law said, but what you can do is when you're stopping somebody, you can ask them to show papers. Okay, what do you think? And the court in its decision said that they're going to look and see how this law plays out.
Yeah.
In other words, they're waiting for the next case, which is already in the courts, but they're waiting for the next case to come before them to decide that part of it.
Yeah, they basically said they couldn't make a decision on whether it's unconstitutional because it's a law that hasn't been implemented yet, so they couldn't say whether or not it's unconstitutional until a law enforcement officer pulls somebody over and asks them for their legal status, and then find out it was either based on, either on something that's valid or something that is what most people are going to think is racial profiling. And so that's what they're waiting for, is some lawsuit to come up and come back to the Supreme Court so they can then prove that it is unconstitutional to stop somebody based, basically what they're going to be doing is stopping someone based on, on race.
Now, here's what I'm thinking on that one. If I was in this country from another country and here legally, I'd be able to show it. Not that I think every police officer is going to know what this is, but I'd have a passport with a visa stamped in it. Mm-hmm. And usually if you're in another country, you always carry your passport with you. Mm-hmm. Either that or you're here legally and you have a green card and you pull it out and you show.
But what about you, David? What if you get pulled over?
What if I get pulled over? I can't prove I'm a... What am I going to show that I'm a citizen? That's my point, exactly.
Yeah, anybody can get a state ID.
Now...
yeah.
Right. But and are they going to accept just a driver's license as proof? I mean, I would, and the argument is, oh, well, I wouldn't get pulled over for and ask that because they'd have no reason to suspect.
See, but that's just it. You're buying into the whole racial profiling thing, because I predict that will occur, and it will occur en masse, you know, when this law unfolds, because it's built in.
How do you
look at somebody and tell, well, what are they going to use in Arizona? They're going to say, oh, you're brown. Mm-hmm. Let's see your papers.
Yeah, I mean, if you even look at New York and what's been going on with Stop and Frisk in New York City, that, you know, they're basically stopping people based on, you know, on race, because they think they said 99% of the people that they stop are usually not doing anything wrong, but 87% of the people that they stop are Hispanic and Black. Mm-hmm. And actually the number of people that they stop in New York City is larger than the actual population of minorities in the city. So people are getting stopped 20 to 30 times in the city of New York. I've heard some stories about people who have been stopped, you know, at least 5 or 6 times, stopped and frisked, and each time they've never done anything wrong. So there is a possibility that this can be something that's going to go on in Arizona, that some people are just going to be getting stopped for no apparent reason, you know.
And you know, Republican Senator Marco Rubio from Florida made a statement recently, you know, that if the majority of our illegal immigrants were from the northern border, from Canada, this wouldn't be happening. But because they're happening south of the border, then they can, you know, invoke this sort of, you know, legal racial profiling approach.
I'm just curious how they're gonna do that, considering that there are many European illegal immigrants in this country also, and who they're gonna stop and how they're gonna implement it. And that's what the Supreme Court is waiting on to see what happens in Arizona as far as whether or not they can throw that fourth provision out as well.
And just to make this even more practical, I'm saying, what would I show? Because I don't know what I would show. How would I prove that I'm a citizen? Well, I don't carry around my passport. I have it at home. Am I supposed to start carrying that? I find that.
No, I
kind
think
of
they'd
offensive.
Haul you in. I mean, just looking at you, David. I mean, you'd be hauled in. You'd done something.
But I was talking to Omar Narvaez, who's the president of Stonewall Democrats. Mm. His family's been here more generations than mine has, and he has a Hispanic name. If he's stopped, he was saying, "I don't know what I'd show."
Yeah,
how am I supposed to prove I'm a citizen? I don't carry around my papers. So what are my papers I'm supposed to show?
Yeah, what is that? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what papers.
I don't know what papers to carry.
You know, is it birth certificate? Is I mean, what is it?
But right wingers don't believe in your birth certificate.
Oh, that is true.
You don't have your original long form. Not in PDF format to show,
but then
be prepared to be hauled in anyway, because it's apparently meaningless when the state tells you it's the certified copy.
And that's my point. What are you supposed to carry? Who are you supposed to? You know, anything can be forged.
Yeah.
Well, here we go. This is, you know, we just drive around Arizona. There we go. We just miss it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people in Arizona, you take your chances, maybe move. You know, because it really is, it's a problem. It's mm-hmm. going to be a real problem. Yeah. But it's the same sort of thing. You can't bring it to the court and have a valid question about it until it's been implemented and somebody's, you know, been, you know, invoked against, I suppose. And that's the same thing that's happened with the healthcare law as well, what, you know, the right-wingers call Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can you... That's a question before the court, is will the individual mandate even be considered? Because if until it goes into effect and someone is penalized in 2014, you know, for not having insurance,
you know, can,
so you
can
think
it
that's
be?
The, that's the route it's going to go. It's, that they're going to say that it hasn't been even been implemented yet. So how can we make a decision about
it? One of the questions up is that, you know, can they even really consider that as part of the? They answer the question before the law has been implemented.
They can rule on it if it's a penalty. They can't rule on it if it's a tax, because you can't challenge a tax until the tax has been imposed. That's the law.
We'll see what they say.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with Letitia McDaniel and the late Patty Fink, and we'll be back with more right after this.
You're listening to KNON 89.3 FM in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
Want to find out about upcoming events at KNON? Want to see pictures from past events or need information about the station? Then you need to like the official KNON Facebook page. It's easy to find. Just go to facebook.com/KNON893. It's the KNON 89.3 FM station-produced page for Facebook. It's the easiest way to keep up with what's going on here at KNON. Like us and share with your friends today. That's facebook.com/KNON893. Accept no substitutions.
The Sons of Herman Hall Golf Association presents a golf tournament benefiting KNON on Saturday, June 30th at the Indian Oaks Golf Course in Kemp. Check-in time is 7 a.m. and tee time is at 8 a.m. The $70 entry fee for this Florida scramble includes green fees, mulligan, lunch, and prizes. There'll also be auctions, games, a beer cart, and more. To register, go to KNON.org for the link or contact 00 at 972-922-4893. That's 972-922-4893. Come single or bring a team. All proceeds benefit KNON Radio. The Indian Oak Golf Course is located in Kemp, Texas, less than 1 hour southeast of Dallas. If you have any goods or services that you would like to donate for prizes and auctions, please contact 00 or Colleen at KNONColleen@yahoo.com. This event is produced by the Dallas Sons of Herman Golf Association. That's a golf tournament benefiting KNON, presented by the Dallas Sons of Herman Golf Association on Saturday, June 30th at the Indian Oaks Golf Course in Kemp.
Hi, this is Patty Fink, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Letitia McDaniel. Our guest is Anna Waugh from Dallas Voice. Okay, so we were talking a little bit about the Papers, Please law, but the one that's coming up is the health care law. We don't know what they're going to do with that. Anna, what's your guess? And these are totally guesses.
I don't know. I think it is possible that they just wait till it's implemented and then they have a case, because if they're following the pattern of what they do with immigration, that is most likely. But that's one state, whereas this is the entire nation. Mm-hmm. So I think if they make a bigger decision one way or the other, that could really impact a majority of Americans. But at the same time, they have to take the majority of Americans into account when they make that decision. So it could go either way.
Okay, Letitia.
Total
guesses.
Total guessing. I think that I'm hoping that if they are going to throw something out, they just throw that provision out and then leave the rest intact. But they said that can also lead to another, you know, other catastrophic thing as far as, you know, how it affects the rest of the bill. But if they're just going to throw something out, just throw that out, you know, let people suffer.
Mm-hmm. I think it'll blow up the actuarial tables, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, absolutely will. If everybody's not playing, and then you have to say, well, who's not? Then that changes rates for everybody.
Yeah.
That's part of the point of having the individual mandate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go with they're going to uphold it. And I think there are a lot of precedents in, you know, Congress passed laws in the late 1700s when we were first a nation to require sea mariners to carry individual health insurance. You know, I mean, there's precedents for this. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a Republican idea that was introduced in Congress in the 90s,
mm-hmm.
you know, the individual mandate. And I think there's objection now because we have a black president. That's my honest belief. It has nothing to do with whether it's constitutional or not. They just don't like it because Obama did it.
To back you up on that one, there was a new survey out on support for same-sex marriage. Now, support for same-sex marriage among blacks, since Obama made his statement, went from something like 42% to 58%. It was that big of a jump within 2 weeks. People didn't just suddenly evolve. People jumped right in. on that one because of his leadership on it. Well, the latest survey shows that among Republicans, support for same-sex marriage has dropped by 10% since Obama made his statement. Now, again, has nothing to do with what you're really feeling about it. It has to do completely with Obama. So I'm agreeing with you on people who are against it, who are violently against it, are mostly against it because what they're really against is anything Obama has done, without even thinking that, but this was your idea. So it has nothing to do with that.
I honestly think that's there's a lot of that at play in this country, you know, that because otherwise, when you look back at what happened in the 90s when Newt Gingrich was the Speaker of the House and you know, there was Hillary Clinton was, you know, working toward health care reform and they were introducing lots and lots of creative ideas on both sides of the aisle. You know, one of them heavily pushed by the Republican Party at that time was the idea of the individual mandate. It would change actuarial tables such that it would help, it would benefit everybody. Plus, we would have people who would be covered. You know, and there was there's no free riders. You know, no free riders. That's what they called them. You know, people who go to get their health care for free and never pay a dime.
Yeah.
Well, that's still going to happen unless we have an individual mandate and try to curtail it. And you know, it's been a traditional, original GOP idea from the get-go. We have a new president, introduces it, gets it passed, and it, that's horrible. It's horrible. We have to take it to the Supreme Court and fight it. Get it ruled, you know, unconstitutional. It's insane. It's insane.
And I'm thinking they're going to throw something out. I'm not sure what.
Yeah.
Something is going to be declared unconstitutional in this.
Obama's unconstitutional.
Reminds me when I lived in Libya. We would always, you know, they would flying into the country. They would say, "Oh, you're entering the, you know, the Libyan nation. You can't have any newspapers, magazines, books, you know, all this stuff." And everyone who lived there would immediately grab the airline magazine and put it in their bag, and they'd be like, "What are you doing? They just said you can't take the." I said, "Well, they're gonna take something. They're gonna take something from you. Do you want it to be, you know, the stuff you care about?" Or the obvious. Let them give, put something in there they're going to take. And they're going to have to, you know, rule something on this thing. Like, strike something out just because on principle of the thing.
Right, you know? Because with the Arizona law, everybody declared victory and everybody said the other side lost on this one. So it gave, they're going to pull something. I actually don't like the individual mandate. What I don't like about it is the requirement to deal with these criminal insurance companies that this year jacked up rates by 25%. Our rates, I know, would have gone up even more than that had we not switched companies and increased our exemption. Our annual deductible.
It's a game show. Game show.
Yes, we're playing Pictionary here. So I don't like the individual mandate. I'm not seeing how a lot of people are going to be able to afford based on what the insurance companies are doing to rates and what they're being allowed to do. Because what this law allows is for an insurance company to keep 20% of their premiums as profit. So it's in their interest to jack up the cost of health care so high, because 20% of a trillion is a lot more than 20% of a billion. And it's in their interest to jack up health care costs to the unaffordable level.
But they have to refund if it's not spent directly on health care.
I understand that. So it's in their interest for you, Dr. Fink, to be charging $500 per visit rather than $100 per visit. And that's what I'm talking, because they can keep the 20% that covers the cost of
well, I don't know that it's going to go that way, and I work in healthcare. But I don't think it's, I think it's going to be chaos if they rule out the individual mandate, because the insurance companies in the market is really looking to, I mean, they're preparing for this. And it's, I think it's going to be a lot of chaos if it's thrown out. But I don't think, I mean, you have to remember, insurance companies are financial institutions, period. And you actually see some of them advertised now as financial institutions, but that's what they are. And they're in markets, and they're, it's all about, you know, money and investing their money. But I don't think that they're going to be, I don't think it's going to play that way. I honestly don't. But I could be totally wrong.
I mean, it's getting to the point where I know our insurance is basically unaffordable. our insurance covers so little that if I had to use it, I think after going to the doctor, my next stop would be the bankruptcy attorney. And I'm serious about mm-hmm. that. It is that bad. I have a $10,000 deductible on my insurance.
That's insane. That really is insane.
So what does it cover? Nothing. And we're paying 25% more than we were paying last year. Don't tell me our health care costs in our office went up 25%. They didn't.
But, you know, under the new law, if it gets fully implemented, you would be able to shop for that in exchanges where smaller companies such as yours would be able to pool together with others and hopefully your rates.
Well, we're already in a pool.
Right, but these would be...
Larger pools that should bring down the rate. One thing that I don't think is fair in this law is that we'd have to be in a larger pool of some sort. However, a large company gets rates that are much lower. It doesn't cost less to insure, Letitia in her major company. She works for UT Southwestern. So in her large, it doesn't cost less to insure her than it does to insure me. We all live in the same area with the same hospitals. Our insurance rates should be comparable, with the only adjustment being I'm older, she's a hypochondriac, you know, those kinds of things.
She's a very young hypochondriac. That makes a difference. Uh-huh.
You have no idea how many times I go to the doctor.
But that's what should not what size company I work for. It should have nothing to do with my rates, and it still will. So I hate insurance companies altogether. I think, in a way, I'm rooting for the individual mandate to be thrown out so that we have to go to single payer. I mean, that's just me. What do I think will happen? I think something will get thrown out.
They'll find something because we have to find something to throw out.
It seems like with this court, they do, because with the Arizona law, they could have just thrown the whole thing out. I mean, how do they think show me your papers is going to play out? I mean, honestly, they're going to be racially profiling people, and it's going to get thrown out when they racially profile somebody who is a citizen, and a police officer bashes him in the head, and it goes to court.
Well, there's some people who don't even believe that racial profiling actually exists, that these people are getting pulled over because they did something suspicious, you know? So and maybe there's somebody in the court that believes that, too.
Right. We have somebody who works in our office. He's black and lives in Plano. And one night on his way home, he got pulled over twice in Plano. Please.
Within
he was driving
minutes.
While black.
Within 12 minutes.
Right. Twice in 12 minutes. He wasn't doing anything.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, a little cruise through Highland Park... being the wrong color in the wrong kind of vehicle, you know, that's a trek.
Yeah, don't have a domestic car in that area.
Right.
go ahead.
I was going to throw out a question here because this has really been really bothering me. I just wanted to get some views on, we have this, we have a president now who supports marriage equality, and he's been vocal about that, and NAACP has come up, you know, it's been in the news. And here we have, you know, state party platforms in the Democratic Party that are, you know, coming up with their platforms that include that. The Republican Party, on this by token, has, you know, a different platform. And yet we've been seeing this, I think, this really ratcheted up anti-gay rhetoric from so many places. What do you think? Is that related, do you think, to this this new embracing of marriage equality? Because I think it is. I think it's a reaction to that, where they're saying, you know, build a pen 100 miles by 150 miles and the electric fence and put them in there until they die. I mean, there's that kind of, and the little boy singing, you know, no homo's going to get into heaven, and, you know, I mean, people applauding this kid, and there's all this stuff. What do you think's happening? Because we're hearing so many
Two girls in the park in just a rural Texas, you know, beach area, getting shot in the head.
We have to grant this, that hate crimes have been going on for decades, mm-hmm. and it's not an isolated new thing. Sadly, it's not. But I think a lot of this rhetoric is. Mm-hmm. But what is your take on Tisha?
Well, I'm just thinking that, you know, the church, well, I'm going to just call it out and say the church is feeling like they're losing their control or their, you know, their grip on, you know, on society as far as their influence. And so they have to hold on to what they can, which is their own little individual church. And you know, I have my own personal opinions about churches and how they finance themselves, and so they finance through brainwashing. So, but in the cases of some of these churches, but I'm thinking that they feel like they're losing their grasp on their influence, and this is like their last straw and their last little ditch resort to bring their influence, and that's what I think. That's why we have all these crazy preachers that are coming out against marriage equality or against gay people in general, and they're just trying to hold on.
What do you think, Anna?
I completely agree with that. I think they're grasping at straws to maintain their audience and to prevent the world from evolving, the public opinion from evolving. And I think when you have young lesbians who are open about their relationship, and people don't hide anymore, they don't hide who they are, they put stickers on their cars that celebrate their family, they put pride flags in their windows at home, and that makes them more of a target. And because they are targeted, that does raise the question of, are they being targeted because this shift is changing? Because you have that far right that's like, this cannot change, we won't stand for this, we'll do whatever it takes, we'll compare it to the Nazis and to putting them in fences. Is that what it's going to take? You know, you had another pastor that said, I think they should be put to death like it says in the Bible. Why are you so against this? What is this doing to make you question the foundation of your religion and of your position as a religious leader? So I think that is definitely their response. The religious community, the far right community, and anyone against it. The essential lack of knowledge about what it means to identify as being gay in this day and age.
And just the outlandish statements that they're making is actually bringing more attention to their church.
Absolutely.
And bringing in, and maybe bringing in more people, which is bringing in more money.
It's like, who can do the most outlandish, hateful thing to get the most coverage?
Yeah.
So
I'm wondering, you know, I grew up in the 60s and 70s, but and actually the school I went to first was 1 year, the year prior to my first grade attendance there had been desegregated the year before I attended. And so I remember some of those times, but I wasn't old enough to really watch it in the way we would today. But I wonder if there were, as you know, like a lot of the implementation of the Voting Rights Act and Civil Rights Act unfolded, if there was a ratcheted level of violence or a ratcheted level of rhetoric. You know, we should get someone from who knows to come on the show, because I think that's what's happening now, as we're seeing a big reaction. It just gets really vile.
Amazing. And talking about bizarre statements, David Blankenship, who was one of two witnesses in the Proposition 8 case, for Proposition 8, so he was against the gay community, against same-sex marriage. He's now come out for same-sex marriage. His statements about it are real bizarre. His testimony in the trial was ridiculous. He had written a book about what marriage does to support the society. And so David Boies, who was the attorney for our side, he asked him, well, would gay couples also benefit from it? And he said, oh, yes, I can think of at least 10 ways. I mean, now he's saying, well, so maybe that's a good thing for society. And, you know, it's like, thanks for your help, and, you know, go... go take a flying leap.
Read something on the internet.
Yeah. I mean, with help like that, you know, thanks a lot. Next week is 4th of July. Will you be here?
I will.
And you'll be here? Okay. And Anna, thank you very much for being here today. And
thank you, Anna.
For all of us at Lambda Weekly, have a nice 4th of July. Have a nice 4th of July Eve, and we'll see you
and
next
happy
Wednesday.
Pride.
Yes, happy Pride.